Welcome back to the Curtis Research Audio Archive. Today we're going to explore something really fascinating, the spiritual heritage of the Kurdish people. You shared some compelling research looking into possible connections, links to ancient shamanistic traditions within Kurdish culture and beliefs. So our plan is to really unpack these sources, look at the key insights, and hopefully give you a richer understanding of these enduring spiritual threads. We'll be looking at pre-Islamic roots, how things show up in faiths like Yazidism, Yarsinism, Alevism, and also how they might survive in folklore and even practices today. So maybe to start, let's get on the same page. Mm-hmm. When our sources talk about shamanism, what are we actually talking about? What are its sort of core features?
Right. Well, shamanism, fundamentally, it revolves around this figure, the shaman. Think of them as a kind of intermediary.
A bridge, almost.
Exactly. A bridge between the human world and the spirit world. And they often get there through altered states of consciousness.
How do they do that?
Usually through rituals. Drumming is a big one, chanting too, ways to connect with spirits, maybe ancestors or animal spirits, nature spirits, that kind of thing.
Okay.
And underlying it all is usually an animistic worldview, the idea that spirits are, you know, in the natural world.
That not just an empty landscape.
Not at all. Yeah. And the shaman's role is often very practical, healing, finding lost things, divination, offering guidance.
So helping the community.
Precisely. Often through what's called journeying, where their consciousness is believed to travel to the spirit world. They're often called the walker between the worlds, which I think captures it nicely. It's very community focused.
That walker between the worlds idea is powerful. And the practical side, too. Can you maybe give an example just to help picture what potential Kurdish expressions might look like in comparison?
Sure. Siberian shamanism is often brought up as a kind of classic example.
Okay.
Their cosmology often talks about three worlds, upper, middle, lower, linked by a cosmic axis, like a world tree or mountain. And the Siberian shamans, they're believed to communicate across these realms, often using dreams, visions, trance states. Again, drumming and chanting are key techniques.
Makes sense.
They might use symbolic tools like a drum representing the universe itself. And their rituals cover healing, purification, looking into the future, even guiding the souls of the dead. So it gives us a useful framework for thinking about possible parallels.
Got it. So when we turn to the Kurdish context, the sources are clear.
Mm.
Kurdish shamanism isn't like a formal religion itself.
Exactly right. It's not some codified system you can point to easily. It's more like finding shamanistic themes or influences woven into the wider fabric of Kurdish spiritual life.
And the fabric is pretty complex, isn't it?
Oh, incredibly layered. You've got influences from ancient Mesopotamia, ancient Iran, various local polytheisms, then Zoroastrianism, Christianity, and of course, Islam, which is the majority faith today, mostly Sunni Shafi'i.
So with all those layers, where are we most likely to find clearer traces of these older, maybe shamanistic elements?
Well, the indigenous minority faiths are really key here. Yazidism, Yarsinism, and Kurdish Alevism.
Why them specifically?
They're often seen as potential, let's say, reservoirs where pre-Islamic ideas, including potentially shamanistic ones, might have persisted more visibly.
But probably changed over time.
Absolutely. It's crucial to remember these elements wouldn't just be preserved perfectly. They'd have been syncretized, blended, reinterpreted within the frameworks of these later faiths. So we need to be careful and nuanced in how we look at it.
It does make sense that smaller groups, maybe facing pressure, might hold on to older beliefs more tightly.
That's a very plausible factor. Their histories often involve incredible resilience, sometimes against persecution. Holding on to distinct traditions, including spiritual ones, could absolutely be part of maintaining their identity, including those ancient roots.
Okay, let's go further back then. What about the pre-Islamic period? What was the spiritual landscape like?
We're talking deep roots here, intertwined with ancient Iran and Mesopotamia. Before Islam became widespread, many Kurds likely followed a kind of pre-Zoroastrian Iranian faith.
Stemming from even older traditions.
Yes, from Indo-Iranian traditions. It was a complex picture with local deities interacting and then the later development and influence of Zoroastrianism.
And how do those ancient roots feed into Yazidism, Yarsinism, Alevism?
Well, the thinking is that elements from those older faiths continued, evolved, and found expression within these specific groups. You also had the arrival of Indo-European peoples, bringing their own Aryan religious practices and deities into the mix.
So if we're hunting for proto-shamanistic threads in that ancient world, where's the best place to look?
Early Indo-European and Iranian religions often showed characteristics we'd associate with shamanism, things like animism, that belief in spirits everywhere.
Right, nature spirits.
Exactly. Nature veneration was huge. Pantheons of deities, yes, but also ritual specialists who really seemed to function a lot like shamans. That Western Iranic pre-Zoroastrian faith seems like a particularly key layer where these proto-shamanistic elements were likely strong.
And Zoroastrianism itself.
Even early Zoroastrianism, with its own reverence for nature and quite complex cosmology, probably had areas where its worldview overlapped with those older shamanistic ideas.
This nature veneration, it keeps coming up in the sources as a really strong theme in Kurdish regions. How does that connect?
It's a huge indicator. This prominent, persistent reverence for nature, described sometimes as fire worship, reverence for natural forces, seasonal festivals integrated into later customs, that's fundamental animism, isn't it?
Which is the foundation for shamanism, as you said.
Exactly.
What about Newroz, the Kurdish New Year? Does that fit in?
Newroz is fascinating. Celebrated at the spring equinox, it's obviously got huge national and mythological meaning, like the Kawa story, but elements like the lighting of fires.
Symbolizing renewal. Light overcoming darkness.
Right. That could very well echo much older seasonal rituals, potentially including some with shamanistic roots focused on the turning of the year and rebirth.
It seems like it goes deeper than just big festivals, though. The sources talk about reverence for specific places or things in nature.
Oh, absolutely. There's a strong tradition around specific natural entities. Ancient trees, for example, often called Dere Mirazan or Dara Miraza, the tree of wishes or miracles.
A waiting tree.
Essentially, yes. People believe they had healing powers, could grant wishes. You still see the practice in some areas of tying rags or cloths to their branches.
And these trees were seen as having spirits.
Yes, often believed to be dwelling places for guardian spirits called Du, linked to fertility, guidance, power, protection. Sometimes offerings were made.
And we have historical accounts of this.
We do. Travelers in the 19th century wrote about Kurdish communities, including alevis, worshipping stones, old trees, water sources, believing they were sanctified, maybe by prophets, or just inherently divine. And then you have the concept of Giari's sacred sites. These could be groves, mountains, caves, springs, places set aside for rituals and offerings.
So what's the big picture here with nature veneration?
It points to that animistic core. Nature isn't just scenery, it's alive with spirits. And the continuity of practices like tying rags shows a living tradition of interacting with this spiritual force for real-world outcomes, healing, wishes. That's very characteristic of shamanistic engagement. It strongly suggests a worldview predating and persisting alongside later religions.
Oh, Hannah the Chai Lady's here. Roj yeah. Bosch Hannah. Oh, this smells wonderful today. You know, sometimes it's a little too strong and you really taste the cardamom, but today, sips. Perfect balance of sweet and spice. This is exactly what we need. Thanks, Hannah.
It does smell lovely. Very welcome.
Okay. All right. Feeling refreshed by that perfect cup of chai. Let's maybe explore how these potential shamanistic elements actually show up within those specific indigenous Kurdish faiths we mentioned. Yazidism, Yarsinism, and Alevism. This seems like where we might see these older threads most clearly. Should we start with Yazidism? What kind of connections do the sources point to there?
Okay, Yazidism. It's ancient, monotheistic, considered an ethnic religion. Its roots are thought to go back to pre-Zoroastrian Western Iranian beliefs, but it's definitely absorbed influences over time from Mesopotamia, Judaism, early Christianity, even Islam.
What's their cosmology like?
They have a supreme god, Eswed or Esdan, who's somewhat remote. Huh. The actual running of the world is entrusted to seven holy beings, or angels, the Heftzer.
Angels.
Yes, and the most prominent is Malak Tas, the peacock angel. There's also a divine triad concept, and importantly for our discussion, a deep reverence for natural elements, fire, water, air, earth. They even direct prayers towards the sun.
Okay, so how does that cosmology line up with shamanistic ideas?
Well, the idea of a distant high god with active intermediary spirits, Malak Tawis and the Heftzer, that feels quite similar to shamanic spirit helpers, doesn't it? Shamans often work more closely with a range of spirits than with a remote creator.
Right, the walkers between worlds engaging with accessible spirits.
Exactly. And that reverence for nature obviously connects back to the pre-Zoroastrian elemental veneration we talked about, a possible link to broader animistic beliefs.
The sources also emphasize sacred sites and rituals in Yazidism. Lalish, for instance.
Yes, Lalish is hugely important. It's their holiest site, where Sheikh Adi's tomb is, a major pilgrimage center. Ritual life includes fasting, reciting sacred hymns called kuls, and visiting other sacred spot springs, tombs of saints.
And the kuls, what's their role?
They're vital. They're oral traditions preserving their history, laws, genealogies, myths, including stories about how the angels influence the world.
Any parallels there with shamanism?
Definitely potential ones. Pilgrimage to specific natural sacred sites like Lalish, that echoes the shamanic idea of power places, spots with strong spiritual energy.
Okay.
And the kuls, preserving sacred narratives and wisdom through recitation. That's very like how shamans use chants or stories to invoke spirits and transmit knowledge. The stories of active angels suggest that constant interaction between the spirit world and humanity, which is central to shamanism.
There's also a specific group mentioned, the Kochaks. These sound particularly relevant.
They really do. The Kochaks operate under the Baba Sheikh. They're described essentially as seers.
Seers, as in fortune tellers.
More than that. They're credited with abilities in healing, divination predicting the future, prophecy interpreting dreams, and even communicating with the dead or the supernatural, what they call the world of the unseen.
So people go to them for advice?
Yes, for advice, if they're ill, if they've had troubling dreams. The sources say they might ponder or dream to figure out which Yazidi saint can help with a specific problem, like one saint for snake bites, another for skin conditions.
That sounds incredibly shamanic. The seer, healer, diviner, spirit communicator role?
It's a classic cluster of shamanic skills, isn't it? Seeing the future, reading dreams, interacting with the unseen direct parallels. And that pondering or dreaming sounds very much like seeking spiritual consultation, perhaps entering an altered state, just like a shaman consulting spirit allies.
Lastly, for Yazidism, what about beliefs like transmigration and purity?
They believe in metempsychosis, soul transmigration. The soul goes through cycles for purification. Sheikh Adi himself is believed to have reached divinity this way.
Okay.
And there's a strong emphasis on religious purity with various taboos, certain foods, the color blue, saying Cheyenne's name, historically limiting contact with outsiders.
How might those connect?
Well, transmigration definitely intersects with shamanic ideas about the soul's journey, its ability to travel or exist in different states. Purification through lifetimes could be seen as analogous to a shaman's quest for retrieving soul parts or achieving spiritual wholeness.
And the purity rules.
While they reinforce community boundaries, they might also relate to maintaining a kind of spiritual cleanliness needed for interacting safely with sacred beings or avoiding negative influences, a common concern in shamanic practice worldwide.
Okay, let's shift now to Yarsinism, also called Alehak or Kakai. What potential shamanistic elements surface there?
Yarsinism is another indigenous Kurdish faith, thought to be founded or reformed by Sultan Sahak around the 14th, 15th century. It's known for mystical, esoteric teachings.
Clutches.
A key concept is Mazariat's successive divine manifestations in human form.
God appearing as people.
Sort of. A primary manifestation in each era, plus seven secondary ones, the Heftan or seven archangels. Sultan Sahak is seen as a primary one. They also talk about two interconnected worlds, an internal spiritual one, Batini, and an external material one, Zahiri.
And the inner world is more real.
It's seen as governing the outer world, yes. It's often described as Kurdish esotericism, maybe influenced by Batini Sufism.
How does this relate to shamanism?
Well, these divine manifestations, the Heftan, they function a bit like powerful spirits, deities, or maybe deified ancestors who interact with the human world. They could be analogous to a shaman's main spirit allies.
Okay.
And that duality of inner-outer worlds, it really mirrors the shamanic idea of ordinary reality versus non-ordinary reality, or the spirit world. The shaman travels to that inner non-ordinary realm to get information or make changes.
Yarsinism also focuses on the soul's journey, right?
Very much so. There's a strong emphasis on the inner journey of the soul, and they believe in transmigration to Dunaduni. A cycle of 1,001 incarnations, they say, for the soul to become purified and perfected.
Again, the soul journey theme.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It directly parallels shamanic ideas of soul travel, soul development across lifetimes. And that long cycle of 1,001 lives, you could almost compare it to the arduous training and transformation a shaman might undergo.
What about their rituals? Any clues there?
Their main communal gathering is the jam, held monthly in a jamkana. There are specific rules, special hats, sitting in a circle facing a sacred point called Pardavar. The tanbur, a sacred lute, is crucial.
Music is important then.
Hugely. along with reciting or chanting sacred words and hymns, the Kalam. Much of this is esoteric, meant for initiates. They also have an annual 3-day fast, and the pomegranate is sacred.
Are these rituals public?
Some communities, like in Helaman, have annual outdoor ceremonies, but many events are kept quite secret, held in private gymkhanas, partly due to history, partly a belief that secrecy increases the sanctity.
And the shamanistic parallels in these rituals.
The use of the tambur, the chanting of the kalam, it strongly suggests using sound to create a sacred space, maybe induce altered states. That's classic shamanic technique.
Music and trance.
Right. The esoteric nature fits with shamanic wisdom often being passed down in closed circles. The communal circle of the jam emphasizes community, which is vital in shamanistic societies. And the secrecy helps create that potent, separate ritual space, like a shaman preparing for a ceremony.
Okay. Fascinating. Now for the third group, Kurdish Elovism. How do shamanistic ideas potentially manifest there?
Kurdish Elovism is part of the broader Alevi tradition found in Turkey and Kurdistan. It's syncretic, a blend.
Meaning it mixes different traditions?
Exactly. It's seen as a heterodox Islamic tradition, following figures like Haji Bektash Veli and the 12 Imams. But, and this is key, it significantly incorporates pre-Islamic traditions, especially Turkic shamanism.
Ah, an explicit link.
Yes. It's thought these pre-Islamic elements came into Anatolia around the 13th century with traveling dervishes, or babas, from Central Asia. They brought Shia and Sufi ideas too, maybe even influences from Manichaeism or Buddhism. And these ideas found fertile ground among nomadic groups who were perhaps less deeply Islamized.
And Kurdish Elovism has its own flavor.
It does. Kurdish Alevis often emphasize Pir Sultan of Dal more and generally show a stronger connection to nature veneration than some Turkish Alevi groups. Some communities, especially around Mansur or Dersim, even trace their origins directly back to ancient Zoroastrian and shamanistic traditions they believe predate Islam.
So that acknowledged shamanic foundation makes Elovism really important for this discussion.
Definitely. The fact that Turkic shamanism is recognized as part of its background is significant, and the stronger nature focus in Kurdish Elovism points again to those deep-rooted animistic connections.
What about their core beliefs? Anything reflecting these influences?
There's a deep reverence for nature. God, as Al-Haq, is seen as imminent present in all living things. So fire, water, natural features are sacred.
Similar to what we saw in Yazidism.
Yes. And strong veneration of ancestors and spiritual figures, Ali, Hassan, Hussein, Fatma, some even include Ataturk more recently, belief in the soul's immortality, supernatural beings like angels, jinn, the evil eye. A central concept is the unity of Haq Muhammad Ali, seeing Muhammad and Ali as reflections of God's light.
How do these connect to shamanism?
Well, the profound nature reverence, seeing divinity in nature, resonates strongly with animistic and shamanic views. The ancestor and saint veneration, that links to the shamanic importance of ancestors as guides or protectors. And Haq Muhammad Ali as divine representations, you could see them as primary spiritual intermediaries, like major shamanic spirits.
The Sem ceremony and the Sema dance are really central to Alevism, aren't they?
Absolutely. The Semada is their main communal worship, modeled on a mystical gathering called the Kirklar Meklisi, the Assembly of 40. It involves prayers, hymns, dej or nefes, spiritual talks, a shared meal, lakma.
And the Sama.
That's the ritual dance, performed by men and women, often in circles. It's meant to help participants reach a state of trance or spiritual ecstasy. Oh. Through the combination of music, usually the saz or balama lute teachings, poetry, and the dance itself. Some forms, like the crane sema, symbolize spiritual journeys, even cosmic flight.
And there's a potential linguistic link.
Some scholars suggest a link between sem and the old Turkic word qam, which means shaman. It's debated, but interesting.
Very interesting. How else do these rituals connect?
The sema itself, explicitly aiming for trance through music and movement, that's directly comparable to shamanic techniques for entering altered states. And if that linguistic link holds any water, it suggests the Sema might have evolved from older shamanic communal rituals.
What about the spiritual leaders, the Dedes?
The Dedes are hereditary guides, traditionally believed to descend from Ali and the Prophet's family. They lead the Sem, offer guidance, mediate disputes, pass on teachings. Their authority works through a lineage system called Okak, or hearth. It's quite similar in structure to how Sufi orders transmit knowledge.
How is their role like a shaman's?
As hereditary spiritual leaders who guide rituals, interpret sacred knowledge, and look after the community's well-being, that's very analogous to the role shamans or spiritual elders play in many societies.
So if we look across Yazidism, Yarsinism, and Kurdish Alevism, what are the common threads pointing towards this older, maybe shamanistic layer?
You see recurring themes, don't you? Belief in active intermediary spirits, or angels. Key spiritual figures who bridge the divine and human. Specialized ritual leaders, or seers. The central role of music, chant, dance. The possibility or goal of altered states, trance. Sacredness tied to nature elements, specific sites. Ideas about the soul's journey, transmigration. Importance of ancestors or saints. And often esoteric knowledge passed down through initiation.
It paints a picture of a shared background.
It strongly suggests a common ancient spiritual substratum, one that seems rich in elements very much like those we find in shamanism globally.
But it seems these older ways haven't only survived within these organized faiths. The sources suggest they pop up elsewhere in Kurdish culture, too.
That's right. These shamanistic echoes, you could call them, also persist in folklore, in traditional healing methods, divination practices, symbols. These less formal ways are just as important for understanding how these beliefs live on.
Let's loop back to nature veneration, then. How does that show up in wider folklore?
Well, that deep respect for trees, especially the Dari Mirzan, mountains, springs, rooted in animism, it's still there in stories and beliefs.
The wishing trees again.
Yes, the belief they can heal or grant wishes, the practice of tying cloths, the idea of dew spirits living in them. And we mentioned those historical accounts of worshipping stones, trees, water, even having forest altars. Plus the jierras, those protected sacred natural sites used for offerings. It's all about actively engaging with a world perceived as having spirits.
What about other kinds of spirits in folklore?
Oh, Kurdish folklore has a rich spirit world. Besides the dew and trees, you have peri fairies and djinn, or genies, often believed to inhabit natural places.
And Alevis also have these beliefs.
Alevis too, yes, beliefs in angels, djinn, the evil eye. And think about Shamaran.
The half-woman, half-snake figure.
Exactly. She embodies wisdom, healing, earth power, a real archetype of the powerful nature spirits you find in many shamanistic traditions. This complex spirit world. It implies a reality people have to navigate carefully, which is fundamental to shamanism.
Traditional healing methods also seem tied into this spirit world.
Often, yes. Traditional healers or midwives might invoke spirits. We talked about the Yazidi Kotrek suggesting spiritual remedies.
Right.
And that folk practice of tying a sick person's clothing to a sacred tree, hoping to transfer the illness, that clearly shows belief in interaction with nature spirits for healing.
Is there anything like spirit possession beliefs?
The sources mention air spirit possession beliefs and associated healing rituals using music, dance, trance to negotiate with the possessing spirit. These are found regionally, including Iran, so there's potential overlap. And those methods, trance, negotiation with spirits, are classic shamanic healing techniques.
What about divination, seeing the future?
Divination or falzani, seeking hidden knowledge supernaturally, definitely exists. Again, the Kotreks are key examples as seers, dream interpreters for telling the future.
And there are specific words for it.
Yes. Falzan for the diviner or soothsayer. Falzani for the practice itself. There are even folk tales about people consulting a falzan, like the farmer Gerdo who saw an omen. The fact that these specialized roles exist is significant. Divination is a core shamanic function, guiding the community.
The sources also highlight animal symbolism. The wolf seems particularly important.
The wolf, yes. Its symbolism and ritual use often seem distinct from orthodox Islamic views, suggesting pre-Islamic origins.
How so?
In Hakkari, there was a ritual where a groom symbolically united with his wife on a wolf pelt. In Uludere, girls wore silver belts with wolf heads for protection. Zaza Kurds and Tumseli see the gray wolf, Boskurt, as a guide. There's a ritual called Kurtaza Balama involving invoking the wolf to protect herds.
Wow. And among Alevis.
Alevis and Silifke consider the wolf sacred. Children might wear a wolf's astragalus bone for protection, or even ingest powdered bone for spiritual ailments. In Kozan, migrants believed a wolf pelt protected women in childbirth from the owl spirit.
So protection, guidance, healing.
Exactly. These attributes, plus using wolf parts in rituals, strongly suggest a totemic or power animal significance, which is very common in shamanism.
Thank you.
That Kurtaza Balama ritual even sounds like trying to negotiate with the wolf spirit.
One last area here, the role of bards, the Dengbej. How might they connect?
The Dengbej are crucial keepers of Kurdish oral history, performing epic songs, morning chants, heroic sagas. Their role, It shares features with shamans as lore keepers, ritual performers, masters of sacred sound and language.
Is there a parallel with Turkish traditions?
Some scholars draw parallels with the Turkish Ayship traditions, seeing them as inheritors of pre-Islamic Turkic shaman, ozan, or kam functions. Poetry, performance.
Interesting. Similarities in training.
Yes, master-apprentice learning, their societal position, even a perceived connection to ancestor or master spirits when they perform the works of deceased masters reverently.
So the Dengbe's performance itself could be seen as...
as potentially continuing ancient shamanic performative traditions. Their powerful voice, storytelling, evoking emotion. Maybe performing these old tales and mourning songs is a way to invoke ancestral memory, connect with spirits, bring about community catharsis. It's speculative, but plausible.
Let's shift gears slightly. Is there any material evidence, like archaeology, that supports these ideas?
There are some intriguing finds. Golden lithographs, basically rock art, discovered in the Zarini area of Kurdistan, western Iran.
What do they show?
Researchers interpret some motifs as reflecting early shamanism. Dancing figures, mountain goats climbing upwards, maybe symbolizing soul flight. Figures with whips, perhaps interacting with hunting spirits. Geometric wheels.
And how old might these be?
They're tentatively dated to the 2nd millennium BCE based on comparisons with other rock art on the Iranian plateau.
What's the significance?
Well, interpreting these motifs this way challenges the idea that all rock art is just random or decorative. It provides potential material evidence, predating written sources, for these kinds of beliefs. A visual record linking contemporary folk practices back to a much older shamanistic layer. That ascending goat is a particularly strong shamanic motif globally.
No, we should probably touch on the Yazdanism thesis. It comes up in the sources quite a bit.
Right, Mehrdad Izadi's theory. He proposed Yazdanism, or the cult of angels, as what he saw as the original pre-Islamic religion of the Kurds.
Connecting Yazidism, Yarsinism, and Alevism.
Yes, specifically Chinarism-based Kurdish Alevism. He argued they all stem from this ancient faith, possibly linked to Mithraic religions. Key features he identified were belief in 7 benevolent angels, the Heftsur, who sustain life and incarnate as human guides, Baba, plus reincarnation.
And he saw this as separate from Islam.
Very much so. He characterized Yazdanis as not following Islamic pillars, not using mosques, having their own scriptures they valued more than the Quran. He framed it as an ancient Aryan faith. Muhammad Mokri went so far as to call Yarsinism less Islamic than Baha'ism.
But this theory is controversial.
Highly debated, yes. Richard Foltz, for example, strongly criticized it, calling Yazdanism Izadi's invented religion, arguing it owed more to modern Kurdish nationalism than historical fact.
So where does that leave us?
Well, even critics like Foltz acknowledge the striking similarities between Yazidism and Yarsinism. They often trace these similarities back to some shared ancient faith among Western Iranians, something maybe related to Zoroastrianism, but distinct.
So the similarities are real, even if the Yazdanism label is debated.
Exactly. Izadi's theory tried to provide a neat framework, and its core ideas, the heptad of divine beings, reincarnation, do resonate with complex shamanic-like cosmologies. The debate itself shows how tricky it is reconstructing ancient beliefs, especially when they intersect with modern identity politics.
Right.
But regardless of whether Yazdanism is the right term, those deep similarities between the faiths strongly point to some common cultural and religious background where shamanistic practices likely thrived and influenced what came later. It just highlights the need for really careful analysis.
Okay, let's bring it to the present day. What's the current landscape like for these practices and beliefs in Kurdistan?
Well, as we said, Kurdistan today is predominantly Sunni Muslim, mostly the Shafi school, but you still have vibrant Yazidi, Yarsani, and Alevi communities actively maintaining their distinct traditions.
And Sufism.
Sufism is also very strong, particularly orders like Naqshbandiya and Qadiriyya. They have their own spiritual hierarchies, veneration of saints.
Which might also have some pre-Islamic echoes.
It's possible. Sufism, with its focus on direct experience, intermediaries, initiation, can certainly parallel some shamanic themes. The persistence of all these Yazidism, Yarsinism, Alevism, Sufism shows that these alternative spiritual paths, some with clear pre-Islamic or shamanistic links, remain meaningful for many people.
Are the more overtly animistic folk practices, like venerating the Dure Mirzan, still common?
It seems they're declining, especially among younger people in cities. Modernization, education, changing values. these things tend to erode those kinds of practices.
But not all traditions are fading.
No, and it's interesting. Compare that decline with the intentional secrecy around many Yarsani ceremonies we mentioned. That's a legacy of oppression, yes, but also a belief that privacy enhances sanctity. So you see different dynamics, erosion, adaptation, and tenacious preservation within close communities.
Are there any signs of revival or renewed interest in these older traditions?
Definitely. There's been a significant Alevi revival since the 1980s, more public expression of their identity and rituals, partly a reaction against re-Islamization efforts, partly asserting cultural rights.
And Zoroastrianism.
Yes, there's been a noticeable renewed interest, even conversions, to Zoroastrianism, especially in Iraqi Kurdistan. People seeing it as a return to an ancient pre-Islamic Kurdish identity. It gained momentum after conflict and disillusionment with extremist Islam. Now it's officially recognized there, with new temples being built.
So people are actively looking back to pre-Islamic roots.
It seems so. These revivals look like part of a quest for cultural and spiritual self-definition, potentially reconnecting with spiritual layers where these shamanistic elements might lie, often tied up with political and cultural self-assertion too.
Is there anything like modern shamanism emerging?
In the broader region, including Turkey, you do see the emergence of modern shamans or neo-shamanic practitioners. People often feeling disconnected from mainstream society, forming new communities, using practices like drumming, fire ceremonies, drawing on global traditions, but also local beliefs to address modern issues like trauma, finding meaning.
Could something similar happen in a Kurdish context?
It suggests a possible pathway. Ancient principles, altered states, spirit work, healing could potentially be adapted for modern urban life, moving beyond the traditional folk forms. The official recognition of faiths like Zoroastrianism in Iraqi Kurdistan certainly creates more space for diverse spiritual expressions, maybe allowing older strata to reemerge in new ways.
Well, this exploration really shows that Kurdistan's spiritual landscape has these deep, enduring connections to ancient traditions, traditions that share so many core features with shamanism.
It does. We've seen it in the reverence for nature, the belief in a living spirit world, the roles of figures like the Kocheks or Dedes, the rituals using music and trance for healing or knowledge.
It's not one single thing, Kurdish shamanism, but the spirit of it seems to persist.
Exactly. It resonates through this incredibly diverse tapestry of Kurdish spiritual life, showing remarkable resilience, adapting over centuries.
This look through the sources really highlights the depth and complexity of Kurdish cultural heritage. It makes you think about how these ancient perspectives might still be shaping spiritual experiences today.
Absolutely. And it leaves you wondering, what other hidden histories might these connections, these ancient threads, eventually reveal?